Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Are you ready?
Hey, guys. Come on. Bring it in. Welcome back to the podcast dedicated to the most precious human pastime. I sit down with friends, idols, and inspirations of mine to shoot the breeze about music, life, whatever. I'm Gregory Porter, and this is The Hang.
I'm just outside of the doctor's office, actually, here in Bakersfield, California, to find out if I'm having a new baby girl or baby boy. So that just ended. I'm having a baby boy. So so you might hear a little street noise here in sunny Bakersfield, California.
Let's get into it. Since his breakthrough in 2016, I followed this singer's story through his music and his voice.
They've never pressured me to do anything that I felt wasn't conducive to who I am as an artist. And it's like, just make what feels right to you to make. And
because you keep making hits.
Finally, I get to unveil what makes Rag & Bone Man so human after all.
I was just like making up stuff on the spot, and then people would start rapping, and then
so you were like the Nate Dogg of the Brighton scene, right?
Kinda, without the bowler hat.
And I'm delighted that he's agreed to be our final guest for season 2 of The Hang.
Rag and Bone Man joining me.
How you doing, man?
On the Hang, man, I'm doing great, bro. I'm great. It's been, has it been like 3-4 years?
It's got to be 3 or 4 years, yeah, man.
Yeah. I can't remember. Was it a regular show or a Hoot Nanny that we did for Jules Holland?
Oh, yeah. It was 4 years ago because it was 2017 New Year's Eve.
Okay, so it was the Hoot Nanny.
Yeah, it
was. Yeah, man. This time flies and your career has been flying. Your life has been flying. Your music has been flying. You know, something that struck me about when I was listening to your music this morning, is you're like me in that message is like most important for you. Messaging in the music, even the backing to your powerful voice, but also the roots where you come from musically. How do you come about? How are you created? You know, how are you created musically and artistically? So.
I like to call it like the rubble of music, like the foundations of what I guess sort of builds you as a person and build you as an artist or whatever. I mean, like I remember being super young and my mum and dad just having this great taste in music, and both very different. My mum was very into folk music, kind of traditional Scottish and Irish and English folk music. And at that time I was like, I don't really like this. This is not me. You know, right. I didn't really feel it, but my dad had left a bunch of records at our house. And in those records, there was some stuff that just struck me straight away when I played it. One of those records, the first record that kind of hit me was Muddy Waters, was I'm Ready, Muddy Waters. That was something that was like, I remember, you know, being about 9 or 10 years old and hearing that bark of his voice coming out of a record player,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And the way he sung was like, it was such a presence. And it just made me go, oh, man, I have no idea as a 9-year-old child what he's talking about, but I'm gonna learn about what this guy's talking about.
Right.
So, and that was the very first thing I kind of remember as something that's really struck a chord with me. And then I kind of sifted through these records and then I found Howlin' Wolf, another like big voice that struck out at me, stuff like Elmore James.
Wow.
these like real big voices that just like, they're such a powerful presence. And I didn't really know anything about songwriting at the time or like I say, what they were talking about, but it was just the instant, like it's there straight away. And
authenticity, the real, the soul, the heart.
Yeah. And it just made me sit back in my seat and be like, oh, well, this is me.
You say your mother was listening to Irish and Scottish and English folk music.
Yeah.
Where are her roots?
Well, she's kind of been a singer all her life. She not in a professional sense, but we always went to, I guess you call them like folk clubs, where everybody would be in a small room and you would go around the people in the room and each person would play a song on a guitar or a banjo or accordion or whatever it was. And it was such a sort of, it's all about stories. Like everything was about stories in that sense. And I maybe didn't appreciate it as much at the time because it wasn't cool to me, you know, being that age. Yeah, my friends were all like listening to like Snoop Dogg, or someone's listening to like Metallica and stuff. And I'm like, I'm sitting at the folk club tonight listening to someone talk about a mining disaster and, you know, But then years later, I really appreciated that. And I remember the stories and I remember it kind of fondly, even though at the time I maybe didn't appreciate it.
Yeah. Rory, let me tell you, man, this is my exact experience. Growing up, you may know my mother was a minister. And so, but she was, she wasn't one of like these new style ministers. She was old school. And she loved to go to churches where the congregation was very old.
For real.
Because she felt like she was going to get something real and authentic. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up in this church where the pastor of the church had built the church. It was this tiny church. And when it first started off, it had a dirt floor. And the people who were in the church were all 80, 90 years old.
Yeah.
And they were singing this old, old Black American country gospel blues. Now, this was in California, but the music was from the South, Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Tennessee. And so so I'm learning this music. Now play that bless that wonderful name of now Jesus. Yeah, now bless that wonderful name of Jesus. Now, at the time, there were these churches that had all of these slick singers and these slick bands with drummers and guitar players and organs and big choirs. That's where I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother had me in this church singing with no air conditioning. It was hot, singing with all these old people. And at the time, I have to say, I actually hated it at the time. But then over time, and even now I think of it, and it's like those were golden moments. And in many ways, foundationally, enormously important in my career. I go back to that place and to that wailing and to that depth of human expression with the voice to make my music right now.
Yeah.
So when you talk about being in this room with all these old, you know, accordions and you know, accordion ain't never been cool in a rock band, but it's, you know, you think of it now, it's like, man, I want to do a song with an accordion, you know?
Yeah,
you know?
For real.
But foundational stuff that can be sometimes like medicine, but so real.
I think it definitely taught me about the importance of you believing somebody when they're saying what they're saying in a song. Because going back to those days being in a folk club with my mum, it was like, it was just one guy on his own singing sometimes, no music around him. And maybe this guy couldn't even sing that well, but because it was just him by himself, I remember to this day some of the songs that this guy was singing, because there was nothing around it, no distractions. And like I said, it was all about the story. So whether he could sing real good or not, I remember the stories to this day, you know.
Sometimes the perfect voice can get in the way of a story.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can be sitting and admiring a person's voice and lose the story. So sometimes that in-between space of not a perfect voice and a great story can be the most powerful thing. You said something earlier. I don't know if it was a throwaway or you said your father left some records.
Yeah. Him and my mom split when I was super young. Like, I think I was maybe 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah.
But he'd left all of his records at the house.
And, okay.
I'm glad he did because, you know, otherwise I maybe would have been very different. But
right.
I remember just being encouraged though to just, even at that young age, like my son goes to my record collection now and he'll pull stuff out and I'm like, no, that's an original press. Don't touch that one. No.
Right.
Like, but my mom didn't care. I mean, maybe because they were my dad's, she was like, yeah, go ahead, do what you want. But
I was
encouraged to pick up the ones that I maybe thought looked cool and just put it on the player and play the records, you know?
Wow. And your son is how old?
He's just coming up 4. He'll be 4 this August.
Uh-huh. I see some awesome videos of you two together.
Yeah.
On your social media.
Yeah.
And that's really cool. And like me, I suspect that your son, your child, has found a way into your music, or that you are speaking to him in your music. You know, I feel like sometimes that, I don't know why I have this idea that I might not be around. You know, that's that maybe I live till 90, I don't know. But I feel like after you have a child, you're constantly leaving things for them, you know? I'm leaving messages and stories and parts of me in the music for him to discover when he's, you know, grown, maybe has his own kids. Are you doing that in your music?
Oh, for real, man. It's totally changed me as a songwriter for this last album that I've written. It's really just a reoccurring theme on this record. And I called the record Life by Misadventure. And it's kind of meant to be a timeline of past and how I wasn't such a great kid and we got in a lot of trouble and, you know, those kind of years were kind of fucked up really. And then the present now where, you know, you get that overwhelming sense of you've got to be somebody else when you're entering fatherhood and you've got to change, you know, your responsibilities are different, your priorities are different, you're maybe different spiritually, all of these things come into play, and also about the world that I've actually brought him into and how I'm worried about his future because we live in such a crazy time that I want to teach him as much as possible at an early age. So that's, you know, played a lot big part in this music that I've written since he's been born, because it's kind of about lessons and about how I want him to be free when he grows up and free to be who he wants to be, free to love who he wants to love, and that he doesn't have to be that man that keeps everything inside, and he doesn't, you know, we learn from our mistakes as men like we really should, and you know, not be told not to cry and stuff like that. So that's the reoccurring theme in the record that I've recently written, and it's totally changed it, man.
Did you make this record during the pandemic in the last year, or had you started on it earlier?
I wrote all the songs with my pianist, Ben. He's in my band. We wrote all the songs together, like kind of like 6 months previous. So yeah, kind of lucky we weren't writing it within the midst of that, because that maybe would have changed it a lot.
Colored the situation, yeah.
Yeah. But luckily,
death, you know?
I feel like I was in a very positive place when I was writing the record, and it's a different color than it would have been. But where we
recording as well, or
no? We recorded the record. So I went out to a place called Gallatin, which is just outside of Nashville in Tennessee.
I'm familiar with it. Yeah,
it's this kind of in the middle of nowhere sort of place. But my producer Mike Elizondo, he has a place out there. He moved from LA to there. We met him previously, and I was like, "Can we come and record the record at yours?" And he was like, yeah. I was like, well, let's go. So, but when we went, the pandemic had just hit. So we got out there. Yeah. And weirdly, we got to the studio and there's a house next to the studio and we had to stay in the house for 2 weeks previous to being able to record with the studio, with the studio next door, but we can't go in the studio because we're like, we got to stay in the house. So we actually had out of like, a month, I think we had like 8 days to record the record.
Wow.
So we had all this time set out, and it was lucky we knew the record, how to play it and shit.
Right. Well, you had some time to marinate, before you got into the studio.
Yeah.
But, you know, the interesting thing is being in Nashville, creatively, even this is a thing that I've heard about Nashville. There's so much music that comes out of Nashville, more than just country music. I mean, gospel music, soul music. There's a lot of music being created and written there. But even the Native Americans believed the soil in Nashville to be a powerful, creative, and spiritual place.
For real.
So it's cool that you went there to make a record.
I felt that when I first went to Nashville to write some songs. The first time we ever went there, it was like a different energy, man. Like,
yeah,
we'd written sort of half the record in the UK, but you sometimes come to a halt with writing songs, and it just got to that point where I was like, I don't have anything else. I've got nothing. So we went out to Nashville to actually write some songs, and there was a change in pace, a change in attitude, whatever it was. Gave me a new feeling of like, oh, I've got something else to say now. So it was a real blessing, man, being able to go out there and work with some people.
Yeah, very cool, man.
Hey guys, you're listening to The Hang. Hit subscribe or follow on your podcast thingamajig of choice to get every episode of The Hang fresh off the presses.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And you're coming up, you know, you're coming up in the hip hop era too. Was that, is that a part of your musical story?
Yeah. Like my first kind of experience of recording on tracks of writing lyrics was over hip hop beats, really, because I decided, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago that I would move to Brighton, which is not far from where I live now, but it was a long way away creatively, a long way away culturally, because where I lived was a small town with not much going on. There wasn't much music happening. No one really recorded music. So I was like, I'm going to move to Brighton and try and meet some people that want the same thing as me.
Yeah.
And it just so happened the first night that I went to was like an open mic hip hop night. And people were playing like Jay Dilla beats and Pete Rock beats and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, I can get down and sing over that shit. So I was just like making up stuff on the spot, and then people would start rapping, and then we would sing over that bit, and someone else would come in and start rapping, and then I ended up forming like a crew together of people. Yeah. And for like a good 3 or 4 years after that, we gigged and did festivals and supported all the hip hop acts that came over to the UK.
Yeah,
man, was,
so you were like the Nate Dogg of the Brighton scene, right?
Kinda, yeah. Without the bowler hat, but yeah.
Wow, that is dope.
Did you ever delve into the world of kind of hip hop stuff? Have you ever done anything?
You know, I wanted to. The very first, I don't know if this record can ever be found. You know, I always say the first person to record me was, you know, musically was Hubert Laws, the jazz flautist. But before that, there was this rapper, and he was taking a bunch of Marvin Gaye songs and rapping over Marvin Gaye songs. So I was singing all of Marvin's hooks. You know, I would just do like, oh, mercy, mercy me.
Yeah. Yeah.
All things ain't what they used to be. So I have no idea where that record is. And then he also did some Marvin Gaye. And then he took up like a bunch of, you know, dirty, nasty songs. But I was singing the hook on it.
Mm-hmm.
So he invited me into the studio, paid me like $33, you know, for 20 songs. and you know, he made this hip hop record. I don't know where the record is. I don't know what happened to the rapper, but I always wanted to be the Nate Dogg. I always wanted to sing the hooks on some of these hip hop tunes, you know. But I always, you know, wanted it to be with like a group, like, you know, like Tribe Called Quest or you know, something like that, you know, soulful, somebody that was mixing in jazz into the vibe.
Yeah.
It never happened to me. I wanted it. I put it out there, but it never worked out for me. But I love hip hop music. I love all different types of genres of music, country music, folk music. No music scares me or is not within something that I can enjoy because I'm connected to message, the story, the very thing that you were talking about when you were talking about those kind of folk gatherings that you went to. The story. A thing that singing hooks in a hip hop group can do for you is give you the strength to understand the hook.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you have.
Yeah.
You understand the hook and bam, it hits so hard, man. It hits so hard. And if you don't know the rest of the song, you're going to know I'm only human. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I tell you what else it did for me. At the time, I didn't think so, but I remember being super shy to sing in front of people.
Yeah.
Those first few times doing that was like, I don't know, I used to do that or just like that. Yeah. Or put my hood up or whatever.
Yeah.
But after a while, man, it just became like this is cool. I didn't have any of those nerves anymore. And you know, I think having that prior to sort of my career getting bigger helped me with that kind of stage presence thing and being able to just sing and look someone in the eyes or, you know, or picture that person six rows back and look them in the eyes and tell them your story, you know?
And that's what I do. Six rows back.
Yeah. But like, yeah, that's the thing. Like I remember seeing a lot of hip hop acts at the time and people that I love, but then seeing them live and not necessarily really getting the stage presence. It was sometimes a bit of a lackluster of performance in terms of like,
yeah,
it sounded all right, but there was no engagement with the audience or anything like that.
Yeah.
So, and when I see people live, the people that I remember are the people not only that sound good, but sometimes have that charisma and just a little bit of, even if not much is said, just a little bit of rapport with the audience and be able to speak to them, talk or just through songs or whatever, just engage.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's been a journey for me. I grew up in a family of eight kids, and you think that I would, you know, that all of us would be extroverts and the ones busting forward for attention to grab the food. But I was quite shy. I saw all the other kids in my family always vying for my mother's attention. I always like, oh man, she must be tired. I was the empathetic one. So I would always just lay back and just be an observer a lot.
Yeah.
And that had an effect on my music. When it was discovered, you know, when my mother said, you know, baby, you have a special voice. I was 6 or 7 years old. That extreme shyness was there. And it was quite a difficult thing to be, you know, around my brothers and sisters who were always saying, go ahead, Gregory, sing. Let him hear you sing. And I was the last one who really wanted to sing.
Yeah.
So it was a journey, finally, to find that comfort.
Do you remember a point where it became comfortable?
Yes. I think the funny thing is they were separate. In church, it was very different because I would put everything on the power of God and the power of that's what was creating the commotion. That's what created the hand claps.
Mm-hmm.
I would put it all on the spirituality and I wouldn't claim it at all. So I wouldn't even take responsibility for my gift. But then when I took it outside of the church, at my very first talent show in high school, I was performing against the band Korn.
Nah, for real.
They went to my high school, but they weren't called Korn then. I don't know what they were, you know, fantasy lovers or something like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I performed for them. I performed in the talent show.
Yeah.
And after I won the talent show, but after the talent show, damn near the entire school came up one by one and gave me a hug on stage. And it totally just took away all of this fear thing. I got a standing ovation and I didn't even come back out to receive the standing ovation. My brother went out to the front of the stage and received my standing ovation, you know, so.
Amazing, man. That's amazing.
So that was the moment kind of that got me over, because I saw that a secular audience, an audience of regular people, unconnected to this, you know, this spirituality, enjoyed what I was doing. And it moved them and it affected them. So yeah, it was a cool moment for me. And after that, I proudly kind of raised my head and sang. Yeah.
Amazing. What a story.
Yeah, man. Going back to what you were talking about, the roots and the things of what we were listening to, we had the opportunity to sing. What did we do? We did the Sam Cooke, bring your sweet lovin', bring it all home to me. And I think the thing I hate about moments like that is, like, I would love it if we could have got together and had some more time to hang out. But always when you're doing stuff like that, it's like, okay, here you are, Rag and Bone Man. Here you are, Kevin Porter. Get together. In 15 minutes, we're going to be recording. So get ready. That's how Jules is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For real. I don't know if you know how nervous I was that day, because I didn't know the song. I knew the tune, but not the words that well. So I was like, when Jules on the phone said to me, he was like, you know, Bring It On Home. I was like, yeah, I know that. I've known that for years. And then when it came to it, I was like, what the fuck are the words to this song? I've been singing it for years, but singing the wrong words. So, but I kind of like being thrusted into those to those moments, you know, sometimes, because it brings out the best of you now and again.
That's exactly what I was going to say. So we were smashed onto stage together and it was cool. You know, I'm singing the Sam Cooke part, you singing the Lou Rawls part. But yeah. I enjoyed just the sound and the energy of your voice, no matter what you are singing. It's just so, there's a command.
Yeah.
You have a command to, your songs become commandments. And
I got that from Muddy Waters, man. I can't take that as my own.
So yeah. So the song I was listening to today was your new single.
Yeah.
Can we talk through the words of that?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Of course.
Yeah, run it down for me, because, you know, I had to go before I could, you know, pick apart the lyrics. But there was some real strength there. Tell me what that song is about.
So I don't know what the things that you romanticize about your sort of childhood and teenage years, but for me, it was going to places like Brighton and South London and going to those like spit and sawdust venues where bands would play and people would get drunk. And it was just like, it felt like a really good time. And the places that I kind of remember when I was younger, like that big wall that had that graffiti piece on it, you know, that club, that club that used to play hip hop at 3 a.m. that you would go to after the gig. And these places that have like, for us, real like cultural importance, because if those places didn't exist, then the bands that were playing at the time wouldn't exist.
Where would we be? Yeah.
And like, it just got me thinking about how these places just become sanitized. And I, when I go back and visit places, like I've been to Brighton to see my pals and I'm like, oh yes, go, let's go to that club. Do you remember that place? And he's like, no, it's not there anymore, man. It's a block of flats or it's a new coffee shop or whatever. It's just really sad. And and that's what I was trying to capture in the song. It was like a question. Is it like, is that all you ever wanted? Is that, is another coffee shop and a fucking haberdashery or like something that something that we don't need in place of something that we really needed?
Yeah.
And there's a few lyrics that I tried to capture in there, like, you know, there's no painted trains on the underground, no kids with spray cans jumping over fences. It was like, you know, if you're sanitizing everything, it's like you're painting over everybody's artwork and putting out flats. And another one was, I'm standing at in the line for the hole in the wall because people still need cash to buy their freedom. Is when I lived in Brighton, the clubs that were open, there were the cash machines, the ATMs near those places. The homeless people would hang out by the cash machines,
yeah,
because people would be in the clubs paying for their drinks over a Visa card. But when they wanted to go and buy their drugs, they had to go get cash out. So they came from like, people still need cash to buy their freedom to go and buy a bit of weed or whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just tried to capture a feeling in that song of like, why is everywhere being sanitized?
Yeah. You know? Powerful messaging in the song. Vibe wise, you know, you close your eyes, there's somebody jumping around with a guitar as well in that song. But underneath it is still those driving blues.
Mm.
And that's in your voice.
Yeah.
It's just there.
Yeah, well, someone a few years ago gave me a really useful piece of advice. It was someone that from a record label that I met. And they said to me, oh, it doesn't really matter what you sing. You can kind of do anything because the bit that people will remember will be your voice over the top of it. So don't feel like you have to just do one lane. You know, you just feel like you can do whatever you want to do. And with this record, I was like, oh, fuck it. I'm going to do exactly that. I'm going to make a bunch of singles that come out that sound, every song sounds totally different. It has a different vibe, you know. So that's kind of what I did. I was like, I'll make whatever music I want to make, regardless of kind of genre or whatever. I just want the songs to speak to people.
Where does that freedom come from? Did that happen on your own, or was there some? Well, did you talk to somebody in the industry, or was there some friends that said, "Man, just do your own whatever the hell it is you want to do"?
I think I'm really lucky because the people at Columbia they've never pressured me to do anything that I felt wasn't conducive to who I am as an artist. And they were never like, oh, go and make this type of music because it'll sell good. It's like, just make what feels right to you to make. And I've always...
Because you keep making hits.
yeah, maybe.
They're basically what they're saying, just go along to yourself in that corner, but keep making those hits.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, when we started making this new record, because it sounded so different, and it's very much a sort of guitar-led record. There are piano songs and there are kind of ballady stuff on there as well, but it leans on a very different set of influences to my previous album.
Yeah.
So I was kind of worried about playing it, and I played it to Julian from my record label, and I was getting ready. I was like, he's gonna fucking hate this. But they didn't. They were like, dude, this is amazing. Like you should be really proud of this work. So, you know, it's good to follow your gut when music's concerned, I think.
And the thing that you said earlier, the consistency and the authenticity of your voice is what will carry every song. I haven't heard the whole project, but it doesn't matter what they do with your songs. If they put that Ibiza, whatever you want to call it, if they put that beat on it, it's still cool. It's still you. You still carry the day. You still carry the message. So this is my connection to you. A whole bunch of different connections. Even what you said about those little small kind of juke joint places being the kind of being the cultivating place for a lot of great music. That's my story, man. Without the place that I talk about all the time, St. Nick's Pub, I don't know where I would be without the laboratory and without the characters. Because the music was influenced by the people who was listening to the music, who was sanctioning. They were like, oh, yes. Yeah, let me hear that 1960 what? Oh, let me hear that, you know, Be Good or Illusion, whatever the song.
Yeah.
They stamped it first. So, we have that connection. But the connection of message and whatever your message it is, you know, sometimes it doesn't even matter the cloak. The musical cloak that the message is put in, especially in this day and age where your stuff is going to get remixed a whole bunch of times.
Oh, yeah.
Authorized and unauthorized.
Yeah.
and that's cool. The messaging will be blasting in some dance club in South Africa and also on, you know, a lazy beach in the Bahamas. So,
yeah.
It's all good. Messaging, baby. Messaging. Yeah, man. I noticed in the video for your new single, you have a fur-lined collar. I'm gonna just say it, man. I know you're representing for the big guys, but with that fur-lined collar, you look like a giant teddy bear.
Yeah.
But I did notice some new tattoos. What's the story of you and ink?
People get crazy irate about tattoos these days, you know. Which I've learned this from my new picture being online. You know, like the picture from the new record and people seeing that I've got these face tattoos and they were like, I can't believe that he's got a face tattoo. And, oh, why would he go and do that to his face? And I'm like, I've got tattoos everywhere else all over. So it's like 3 inches from my face. I don't think I'm going to have to do an office job. I hope not. But I'll probably be all right, man. I took the leap to get a face tattoo one day because my son... He got to the point where he was just started to talk and he was making sounds anyway. And he would just walk along and drop stuff, you know, it'd be like a sippy cup or whatever. And every time he would drop something, he would say, oh no. And it was really funny to me. That's all he would say for ages was, oh no. So I got a tattoo of, oh no, written on my face. Cause I thought it was cool.
I love it, man.
You know, and when my son grows up, he'll be like, "What's that, Daddy?" I was like, "Well, that's you, man. That's you." So
that's you.
Yeah.
That's you.
Yeah.
And it's you, man. It's just you being you and the authenticity that you're putting in to your music, the messaging that you're putting into your music. I suspect there's a lot more that we're gonna, you know, keep hearing from you and getting from you. And even though you're writing songs, optimistic, positive songs, you may have your son in mind, but there's probably tons of people out there absorbing all this positive and good energy that you put out there. I surely, too. I picked up a good vibe from all of the songs. Maybe you've had a little experience working with my producer for my last record, Troy Miller.
Me and him wrote the Giant song together. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Troy's yeah, killer, been, man.
We collaborated on my last record, All Rise. And,
yeah.
and he's a really, really talented dude. And he always talks about you. And you know, it's like, you know, he's like, man, we got to get you guys in the room, man. You know?
Oh, for real. He's
right,
man. We got to
get you guys around the microphone.
He is right.
One of these days we'll do it.
Oh, yeah, for real. Yeah, when the time is right, the stars are aligned. So I was gonna say something about you, like experiences, kind of firstly in the industry when you were just sort of starting out, and experiences that I have about it, and how I feel about it now. And I wrote this song on my record called "Anywhere Away From Here," and the song kind of represents me feeling quite uncomfortable at points of my career, definitely. When I first started to do stuff like TV shows and be in rooms of people, and just not feeling quite like I belonged in that environment. And as an adult, maybe feeling like I shouldn't be like that, but I did. And I don't know how you feel about that, what your experiences are of feeling kind of comfortable where you are, you know, in that situation.
There's a journey of feeling comfortable in your skin. And when I say comfortable in my skin, I mean even, you know, my black skin, going to different environments, whatever. But environments completely different from where I'm coming from. Coming from not a lot of money, coming from, you know, not a lot of cultural outlets in which to express myself. Not a lot of polish and shine really on me. It was a gradual thing to feel comfortable in my skin. I think for me, and I think your record deal came for you, were you after you were 30?
I think just before, like a year before, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And well, mine, I didn't hit, you know, get a record deal until 38, something like that. So I'd had a life, I'd had some other disappointments, I had met a bunch of fools already.
Yeah.
So at some point I just said, I had been rejected. I had already been rejected hundreds of times.
Yeah.
And at the point at which I said, I'm just going to be me. I'm just going to make a record that's me, or one aspect, you know, of me. And as the years go by, I'll continue to make, you know, further expressions of who I am. But at the point I just said, y'all just going to get me.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to get me and my hat. You're going to get me and my style. You're going to get me and my voice. And that's, you know, somebody's got to accept it. You know, you know what I said? Whether it sells a lot or whether it sells 500, this is what's going to be.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool as hell, man. Because when I first started out, I kind of felt like maybe I wasn't good enough, or maybe people thought the music that I made wasn't cool enough, or it, because it harked back to other eras of music, and I felt like I was in a pop world, but not necessarily making what was considered kind of pop music, and maybe felt that I belonged somewhere in the underground of whatever it was I was doing, and maybe not in the top 40 or whatever. But I gradually, like you say, it is a journey, and you get to the place where you do feel comfortable. And I'm like, now I'm like, I'm going to fucking own it, man, because whether or not you think my music's cool, I think my music's cool. And there are people that do. So, you know, there's always going to be people out there, you know, music is subjective, and some people are going to like it and some people ain't going to like it. And, you know, you can't worry. Yeah. You can't worry too much all the time about that sort of stuff.
Eventually, a patina builds on your skin, and a strength in your own vision comes about. Generally, it can come from, it can be buttressed by the people that you're trying to get to, the fans. Ultimately, we have to thank them for a lot of the confidence, swag, bravado,
yeah,
that they enjoy on stage.
Yeah,
y'all can fuel it sometimes.
Yeah,
so,
oh, for real, For real, yeah. 100%. Yeah. If it wasn't for them.
I think you're like me, coming from those same places of self-doubt and insecurity, the ability to have a gradual journey, even though your last few years have been pow, you know, they've been a hard hit, but having a gradual journey, it's been good.
Yeah, man. It definitely builds character. All of those shows for like no money and, you know, I played shows for a long time for some beer and some whiskey, you know, and that was it.
Right. I had this club, because they had this special beer, they could always call me and I was a sucker. They had this beer called Corsendon.
Yeah.
And it was a dark, kind of sweet Belgian beer, and they didn't have it nowhere else in New York City. So they're like, Gregory, we got chicken wings and Corsendon. Can you come and do a set? And I'm like, I'll be there. I'll be there on Thursday.
Yes, sir.
So yeah, man, very cool. Rory, Rag and Bone Man, thank you so much for hanging out with me on The Hang. It's been an honor, and I really respect you as a musician. And onward and upward, brother. And thank you.
Right, it has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, man.
And another episode is done. Damn, they go quick. My friends, this is it for season 2 of The Hang. That's all, folks. I know, don't worry. We'll be back. Thank you for listening, and big thanks again to the wonderful Rag and Bone Man, and to all my guests. And I'm so looking forward to seeing you all again very soon. So until then, take care of yourselves. I am Gregory Porter. This is The Hang, a Cup and Nuzzle production.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.